newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duva and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Happy Monday, Neil. How are you today?
Well, I was good until you told me my shirt was frayed and I should throw it out.
Well, you know, your wife is out of town. I figured someone needed to step up to the plate and help you out.
Well, luckily this is radio.
That's what friends are for. Exactly. And it's radio.
Well, there's other ways to say it. I mean, one way to suggest is, you know, the collar of your shirt looks like it's maybe fraying. It's not, you need to throw your shirt away and then, comma, your collar is frayed. And I'm very sensitive.
I'm not going to bring our guest in today on this little, you know, beef that you have with me, but I would like to share with everybody who our guest is. We have Vinny Arnett from Arndt Construction, who is a fabulous contractor in town. And in the effort of full disclosure, he did work on my house, which I obviously was happy with because I'm having him here on the radio today. Thanks for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
If you're that good, can you fix my shirt?
There are some things not worth fixing. He could, but yeah. I think it's worth it. It would cost too much.
That's a good point. So the first article is by our favorite columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Jason Swaig. And what he wrote about this Saturday is pretty well-publicized study that Fidelity Investments released last week. And it was really kind of strange that Fidelity would have come up with a conclusion, which was that after studying index funds, they found that the average passive investments, which is what an index fund is, did not do as well as a managed portfolio, which sort of not only surprising academically, but surprising that they would publish something like this because they're a very large provider of index funds.
Right, but that said, Fidelity was put on the map pretty much by, you know, Peter Lynch and the Magellan funds. So they definitely subscribe to the theory that active management does make a difference.
True, and this was picked up by some pundits, and it was in some newspapers headline that this study came out, and the fact that index funds are so popular was criticized as something that maybe people should rethink. However, when you delve into the numbers, as Jason Swaig has done, he found the following problems with the study. First of all, they eliminated the most expensive funds, and they eliminated those funds that had lower than a 3-star rating. That is, we're talking about the funds that are actively traded.
Well, and also rated by Morningstar, which is a industry-wide known, you know, rating company for these funds.
But in effect, what they've done is they've eliminated those funds that didn't do that well, which is sort of ironic. But the third and I think the most important criticism is that they didn't show long-term performance. And the reality is that there will always be someone who does very well for a year or two or even three. The real challenge is being consistently beating the market. And there's very few, if any, investors that have historically always beat the market.
I have to say, though, I think it's important that I think there is a place for active management. And I think what you need to do is define what qualities you're seeking out in a manager and making sure that they're sticking to their knitting, because oftentimes underperformance in active management is often due to a style drift or also fees. I think you need to look at expenses.
Well, the article concludes with a little bit of statistical backup to the conclusion that it's very difficult to beat the market consistently. And that is that only 7% of the funds in the highest quartile of active U.S. stock funds in September of 2015, we're still among the top 25%, just 3 years later in 2018. And I think this is pretty consistent with over the longest period of time that a fund will do well with a particular strategy until such time as it doesn't do well because the world has changed. And I take articles out of the paper and put them in a folder, and I've got this one article that's from 3-4 months ago. And
tell everyone who it's from.
From the same
because
writer.
I think my quest for 2019 is to try to get Jason Schwegg on the show because I'm not sure that you would be able to ask him questions because you're like
he's
like a rock star to you.
No, but he may end up charging us for all of the articles we put in. So I think we want to keep a low profile here. But this article, which was written months ago, sort of is a companion article to this one. I don't know if he's aware of that, but it talks about Paul Samuelson. And again, the age disparity between Diane and I is always depressing for me because I said, Paul Samuelson said this, and she said, who's Paul Samuelson? Well, when I went to school, Paul Samuelson not only had one of the most popular economics books available for college students. He had the only one. Everyone took economics, read Samuelson's book. And what's interesting about Samuelson in this regard is that in 1974, he wrote an essay in the Journal of Portfolio Management that said there should be created by somebody a low-cost mutual fund that would replicate the returns of the S&P 500 index. And John Vogel was I guess, a reader, and 2 years later, that's exactly what he did. So Samuelson was one of the early adherents of the idea of investing in the market rather than individual stocks. However, what's really interesting is that where Samuelson made most of his money was investing in Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway at an average cost of $44 per share when he started buying it in the early 70s.
And that was probably the A share.
Well, it was before the A shares.
Because that was before the B share even came out, right?
Well, it was the A shares, and this week the price, he bought them at $44. The price now is $290,000 a share. So here is, sort of the way to put these two theories together. He was an advocate and a proponent of index funds, and yet when he found an investor that was less than just simply passive, but less also than speculative, he was willing to invest, and he made a fortune investing in Berkshire. The next article is Bull Market Isn't Helping Pensions. And one of the things that has really hurt corporate America has been the relationship between stock market returns and unfunded pension liabilities. When the stock market was really hot in the 60s and in certain periods of the 80s, it was very easy for companies to become complacent about funding their pension funds. Now, pension funds in those days were not the kind of things that we think of now with pensions, which are 401ks or even IRAs. They're defined pensions, which means that the employees get a guaranteed amount of money when they retire. And the accounting treatment of these pension liabilities has always been if you put the money that has to be paid out in the future in an investment that makes at least as much as you need to earn to pay those pensions, you don't have to put any earnings into the piggy bank for future liabilities. Well, once the market began to crash in both the 2000 and in 2008, so many pension funds were underwater that people began to wonder whether there was a solvency issue in the case of some of the major companies, including General Motors. Well, in the last several years, the stock market has been booming. I think it's up 3 times since 2009. And yet the article is surprising in that the average pension fund was so underwater because of those two stock market crashes that even with the great increase in values, so many of the corporations still have massive unfunded pension liabilities.
And that's because they were complacent in funding all along. And that coupled with the longevity of people living longer than ever many of those pensions plans were created when life expectancy was, you know, 70, 75 years old. And so when you draw that out to 100, it really makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and one of the things that the current administration is trying to do is take away health insurance so people die without having the ability to get health care. I'm joking.
I'm like this. I'm like, I have no response for that, Neil.
It was a little political tidbit to cheer up your afternoon. But to show you how significant this is, in Maine, the pension funds assumed a long-term investment return of 10%. Now they're assuming 6.75%. It's a huge difference.
That is a huge difference. And many times in boom years, people get really sloppy in their accounting because boom years allows these government agencies to not fully fund and rather earmark the money for other items. And really, it's a real problem.
And, you know, the only saving grace today is that there are fewer and fewer companies doing defined pension plans.
Well, saving grace for the companies, but really for the people that have been working, you know, a pension is one of those things where it's a safety net. I often say in retirement planning, you want to, it's much like building where you want to start with the foundation. And so Social Security is that one brick of that foundation, but pensions are still a huge helping hand when you look at what they provide for. You know, if you know already, if you spend $5,000 a month and you know already you have $2,500 made up of pension and Social Security, it's a lot easier than starting from
of course a lot of ground up. Not a lot, I don't know how many, but many cities in the last 5 years have tried to core
rein
back
it in,
it's some people have gotten very and companies have gotten very employees have gotten very disappointed that what they thought was guaranteed
wasn't. Their livelihood
wasn't.
And you know, oftentimes, especially in a governmental situation, they're accepting jobs that they could otherwise making less than they could otherwise do in the private sector, and so it's a way to attract talent.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached 805-564-1290.
Or you could also email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. If you're just joining us, we have Vinny Arndt from Arndt Construction in studio with us today. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Diane, for having me.
So, Vinny, let's talk a little bit about you. How did you get into construction and what sparked that interest?
I'd say I've been building since I was a tiny kid, go-karts, tree houses.
Everything. The step beyond just Legos.
Yeah. And then when I was in high school, I was a gopher for a contractor, which means you like go to Home Depot, go to, you know, the hardware store, get this, go to, you know, wherever.
The errand boy.
Yep, the errand boy. And then just liked building things, you know. It's kind of been a part of the family.
You know, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal today, which is right on point, about how people who are lucky enough to find a career that is consistent with their childhood passion, and how few people are able to do that, and how today, with longer lifespans, people who were 60s, 70s are now retiring and trying out new things. And you're lucky to be able to have something that you thought of as a kid and were able to actually do it.
Because on that point, you know, when people reinvent themselves in the 60s and 70s, oftentimes they end up spending more money than they can to reinvent themselves. So if they were a builder and then they wanted to go into construction, well, they didn't have that building block to get themselves there, and oftentimes it can be a financial disaster for them. So it is great that you are able to, you know, meld together your passion. Now, when you went to college, you majored in construction?
Construction management, yep, from Chico State.
So. And so what was your first job from there? So you got your bachelor's of science in construction, and then?
I ended up working for a company out in Goleta called Cushman Contracting. And that's what brought me down here to Santa Barbara. Fantastic company, great managers of construction, and learned, I'd say, most of what I know about how to manage jobs and stuff from working for them.
It sounds like it was a big trip. You say that's what brought me down here to Santa Barbara from Goleta?
Yeah. From Goleta.
No, sorry.
Yeah. He sounds like you.
they're located in Goleta. I grew up in Northern California, went to Chico State, so came down here to work for Cushman after. So, yeah.
So now, what do you specialize in the construction world?
I'd say we do about half housework. And then our residential work.
I was going to say housework sounds like, yeah, I don't know, I don't
exactly
remember you sweeping my kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife heard that. And then about half hospital work, commercial work. We're doing, like right now, we have a dental surgeon's office we're remodeling, and then we have about 5 projects with Cottage Hospital.
So how did you get involved in the hospital? Because it's my understanding that with hospital work, it's very specification driven and very, you know, it needs to be very precise. How did you get that into that niche?
I ended up working for Cottage Hospital as a project manager for them back in 07 when they were starting their big expansion project. Mm. And I've always had kind of a background in maybe the detailed, you know, details of construction, budgeting, doing public work, and so it kind of was an easy step to work for Cottage and help them manage the overall expansion project. So I did that from 07 to 14 and then went out on my own in 14.
And so now with your degree in construction management, is that where you got the you know, for everybody listening, Vinny is very fastidious in the numbers and detail oriented of, you know, he brings out the manila folder with it all written down in a very precise manner. And is that where you learned that skill? Or would you say that's just your personality that you've applied to your trade?
I would say that's probably a little bit from school, more from when I worked at Cushman Contracting. They were very organized, and a little bit of that goes to the kind of the background idea that when you present pricing to an owner, you want there to be all the backup and everything that supports that idea so that the only answer is yes. You know, that it looks good, perfect, looks good, you know, let's move on.
Of course, what do you do about competition that doesn't do that and underprices you?
That happens quite a bit, but I think it's just a little bit of education, and sometimes that can take a couple project cycles where they kind of hire somebody that's cheaper. It is a common thing to talk to an owner a couple years later and they'll be like, oh man, we should have hired you guys. But it's hard when you're staring at a, you know, good financial delta. So
I think you have actually a really unique trait that you're able to bring to your business is you're very personable and you have an ability to sit down with clients and make them feel comfortable with what you're saying. And you're also able to really put those numbers in place, which I think is a skill. I know when we were interviewing, well, I actually delegated it to Rob and in full disclosure,
yeah.
But when we were interviewing, that was one of the things that Rob came back and said, you know, I could see having this guy at our house every day for the next 2 months or 3 months, however long this takes, without me wanting to kill him.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's something that's really valuable and really a skill and a quality that is, it's hard to sell in terms of your proposals. But it's also very important as a homeowner when you hire someone to do a project.
Yeah, I think, like, I feel that a lot of my days I feel like half an accountant. You know?
Well, you really are,
yeah.
which I think, well, today being that it's April 15th,
yeah.
You probably don't, but okay. I could see how you feel that way.
Yeah, I feel like half an accountant sometimes, but I think to not have, you know, to do a good job in construction, have good bids up front, you have to be a good accountant. And then also to kind of help an owner close out a job, whether it's a huge, you know, commercial project or a small residential, you have to be able to line the numbers out and they all have to jive. As soon as something doesn't jive, people start kind of questioning. So
one of the inexplicable things in my long history of dealing with contractors has been sort of I don't know whether this is a genetic thing for contractors, but they never finish the last 2%. Which is really so stupid because that's when you get the recommendation.
Yep.
But they're always on to the next job and they don't want to do the punch list or even create the punch list. And it just gets everyone angry, even if they were happy for 98% of it.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's there's an old saying that like the last 5% of the job is 25% of the work. It's a huge closing out a job is I can't say how important it is. And my philosophy is you just got to take it head on. We post punch lists on the wall in every room, and we just go after it. And the other thing I'd say is we try really hard to make sure that we punch out a room harder than any owner is going to, you know, review our work. We have to be the biggest critics of our work. So
talk to us a little bit about the relationship between you and your subcontractors, because I've got to imagine in the bidding process, that's one of the most important things, you knowing who your subs, who you like to work with and who you can trust and who you know what they're going to come in at.
Yeah, a lot of our subcontractors on the residential side, we've done, you know, multiple houses with one after another. They kind of know what to expect from us. We know what to expect from them. Bidding is really easy because we can just plug in almost unit prices, you know, and a receptacle's $100, a light's $300, and you know, kind of we have those guys as our team. That's our preferred group. Sometimes an owner will want us to bring in their roofer or
their painter,
or yep, and we'll adjust accordingly. It's always nice to get introduced to new people, new subs, and see who does a good job, but in our work, they do the lion's share of the actual field work. So making sure we have good ones is the key to our success.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
Coming up Sunday, May 5th, you're invited to the Care for Paws 10th Anniversary Fundraiser. They're celebrating 10 years of helping animals and pet owners in our community. Here's Care for Paws co-founder Isabel Gulo.
On May 5th, we have a big event at Ealing's Park. So we'll be hosting our 10-year anniversary fundraiser there from 3 to 7. Myself and the staff will share stories, but we also have some pet owners there we've helped over the years, and they'll be sharing their stories. It will hopefully be a very powerful, but also a very fun event with great local wine and good food from New West Catering and music. So yeah, it will be a fun day. Tickets are $100. People can get tickets from on our website, careforpaws.org. You can also call us at 968-2273.
To get your tickets for the Care for Paws 10th Anniversary Fundraiser, go to careforpaws.org. That's careforpaws.org. Or call 805-968-2273.
What if every child was sent on the right path, stayed in school, graduated college, got a job, and gave back to the community? What if every child's potential was fulfilled? It could be the start of something big. Every time you donate your time or money to Big Brothers Big Sisters, it helps make a big impact on a child's life. Help us start something big. Visit sbbigs.org or call 805-965-1001 to learn more about Santa Barbara County's Big Brothers Big Sisters program.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, Vinny, there's been a lot of talk about the auxiliary dwelling units in Santa Barbara, you know, whether you should get it, whether you shouldn't get it, how much value is it going to add to your home. What's your thoughts on that, and really, how does a homeowner go about even evaluating that process?
Well, I spent my weekend working on the one that I'm building at my house.
You can come at it from both sides.
Yeah. So for us, it was the easiest, you know, the cheapest and fourth bedroom we could add to our house and have kind of a detached, little bit of a studio, game room, you know.
Where your in-laws stay when they come to visit.
Exactly. Or my mom. Don't tell Karen that. But I think they're a great kind of way to kind of add some square footage that you maybe couldn't add before. With our property, we would have had to have this extra unit attached to the house, and we wanted it kind of in the back in a certain area that didn't really have much use before that.
So now, are you building yours from the ground up? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't an existing structure?
No, ground up, yep. It was pretty easy to permit. The city has, and the county, they've really streamlined it. They are kind of ratcheting up the requirements as they kind of, it was something that got forced on the city and the county, and they've slowly been kind of creating ordinances surrounding the ADUs. But
I've heard, however, that the permitting process for the existing structure has really been sticky and difficult. And
yeah.
How do you navigate that?
I hired an architect.
So at what point in the process should you hire an architect, would you say?
I think if you're a really savvy kind of homeowner who likes to do things themselves and doesn't mind like running into obstacles and working around them, you can kind of fight through the process and get your own permit. You probably would need a draftsman or have some kind of a background in it. But most of the time, I would say an architect's going to be an efficient use of your time if you want to do one. The cost isn't insurmountable. And
so I have a client who's in the process of doing one, and his permits alone were $15,000.
Wow.
And it's an existing structure. It's not even
Is that architect
up.
Fees and everything?
Wow. You know, I that's he yeah. made it sound like it was City of Santa Barbara.
Man, I can't imagine it being that much, but who knows what that included.
Right, so, of course.
So you're in the service business, and the thing that, you know, is really important, like we talked about, Diane saying you wanted to, as a client, to have someone come into your house for breakfast and be personable and knowledgeable and not trip over your way of life. But as you grow, you can't do all of that. You have to then make sure you hire people that can be you. That's a challenge as you get bigger.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm running into that every day, and it is hard to let go enough to kind of let other people fill that role for you. I think a lot of it comes down to when you hire people, you got to make sure that they're willing to take that role on and that you feel comfortable that they can do it. And
how hard has it been for you as a business owner to hire talent? Because in Santa Barbara, there are a limited amount of people coming in and out on a...
Yeah, it's been difficult. A lot of times when you need somebody, it's hard to find them. I guess my philosophy has been when the right person comes along, we hire them, and then the work will follow.
So, and how big are you now?
We have, I would say as of last Friday, maybe 6 people aside from myself.
So a 7-person firm.
Yeah, that's
great. You know, and well, it's that small business that really really fuels our economy in Santa Barbara. You know, when you think about it, it always makes headlines. I say this all the time, but it always makes the headlines when one of the big companies comes in or leaves.
Yeah.
You know, it's 100 jobs here or there. But really, it's businesses like yours, like mine, that fuel our economy in Santa Barbara. And it's so important because we provide those jobs that are good-paying jobs for our workforce here. Which...
Yeah. I think Santa Barbara is unique in that it feels to me like there's a lot of small, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4-man businesses in town. And I've seen a lot of other communities where it feels like, especially in my business, there's fewer companies, but they have more employees. Whereas here, there's a lot of people seem to like to go out and start small businesses, keep them small.
To work for the big clients, you need to be bonded. And one of the problems with being a small company is that you may not be bondable for big jobs.
Yeah.
So do you have any problems with Cottage? Because I know if you wanted to build Cottage, you would have had to have been a big company.
Yeah.
But I guess for smaller jobs,
No, they bond us. Yeah, we're required to submit a payment and performance bond, and it's a brutal process. Bonding companies dig very deep into your financial life, and they actually can kind of dictate somewhat what you can do with the business money and, you know, if you want capacity. And that's been, I wouldn't say it's been a struggle for us, but it's something we're always pushing to make sure our, financial, we're strong so that we can increase our bonding as we also gain more experience in work.
So do they usually require a reserve requirement?
I wouldn't say there's a reserve requirement, but there's just a tacit understanding that your bonding capacity, especially when you're just starting out, is fairly tied to your cash on hand or liquid assets. So.
Gotcha.
And so you need a good bank, too.
I don't know if they really care which bank it's in.
No, but you need a good bank for your business.
Yes.
They don't need a good bank.
So, you know, along that line, was it more difficult to get the first job in the hospital world? And then since that, you can kind of build on it?
It kind of took somebody saying, yeah, we'll take a chance on you. We think you can do the job. And then as you complete job after job, it becomes easier for them to kind of choose to work with you. The first job that we did, we ended up having a contract for like 8.5 months, and we finished it in like 5.5. And it was one of the few hospital jobs that I've ever seen you know, happen on time or early. So
that's incredibly early.
Yeah.
Then of course they want to hire you again.
Yeah.
Now, what is your geographical region that you cover?
As far as I'd like to drive, which
which is okay. How far do you like to drive to go to work?
Well, I'd say Carpinteria on the south end, and we have quite a few jobs up in San Ynez at the hospital up there. So okay.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Rich is just a really, really, really good guy. The term good egg isn't enough to describe him. He's also certified organic and free range. Rich puts the cap back on everything. The toothpaste, the olive oil, the shampoo, everything. He lets his 10-year-old nephew beat him at virtual tennis, even though he can straight up slay his 10-year-old nephew in virtual tennis. When the toilet paper is running low, Rich replaces the roll on the actual holder, not just on the back of the toilet. Rich is texting and driving. Rich? No. What are you doing, Rich? I was just telling everyone how great you are. Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The Foundation for Santa Barbara City College is a nonprofit organization which supports our own Santa Barbara City College. The Foundation for Santa Barbara City College, or SBCC, funds scholarships, childcare, book grants, and other programs. Without these, many students simply would not be able to attend college. There is an amazing range of academic and vocational studies offered at City College which encourage students to find their passion and their talents. As a donor to the foundation, you have the power to change lives. Please help our community college by donating to the Foundation for SBCC. Call 730-4401 or visit us at sbccfoundation.org to find out how you can help. That's 730-4401 or sbccfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
And if you're just joining us, we have Vinny Arndt from Arndt Construction with us in studio, and we have a caller. Hi, caller. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I had a question for Vinny. I was wondering how much sort of direct influence have you sort of seen the economy have on, like, building prices, say, in Santa Barbara over the, sort of the last maybe decade, and I'm wondering if like sort of what's being discussed as far as future changes on the horizon and this sort of current political climate, do you think are going to have like a massive effect on building prices in the future?
What a great question.
I'd say the biggest drivers for our building prices seem to be just how busy everybody is, especially on the subcontractor side. They're, you know, with the like the Miramar happening, we've seen that affect our pricing. Then all the firehouses, the flood houses. There's such a limited labor pool from Ventura to Santa Maria that I feel like they're stretched pretty thin and they're able to kind of throw whatever price they feel like at work. So I think that's the biggest driver we've seen. Then the tariffs have, I think, you know, people have been pricing those in. I don't know how much the tariffs actually have affected things other than aluminum and steel, but I feel like people have used that as an opportunity to kind of add some, you know, maybe profit to some of the typical construction materials, you know.
Do you do any work where you give a fixed price?
Yes. Yeah, quite a bit. Most of our work tends to be negotiated, like they'd say GMP, guaranteed maximum price. But quite a bit of our work also requires that we submit a fixed bid. One thing about construction nowadays is so little of your very finite detailing is defined when we bid a job that your bid can only be as detailed as the direction we get when we bid it. So a lot of times when people think they're getting a lump sum bid or a very hard-priced bid, it includes a bunch of allowances for finishes that aren't determined yet. So it's a little bit of a it's kind of hard to say that anybody's exactly got a fixed price bid.
But then they can discover a thing called change orders.
Oh, yeah.
change orders.
It's Monday morning. Here's your change order.
Yeah.
So in that vein, what makes your business model different than other contractors?
I think, one of my beliefs when I started the business was that the last thing I wanted to argue about with my owners was money. So we do what we call an open book pricing policy where, all of our sub bids are disclosed to the owner. We actually ask our owners to help us pick which sub they would like us to use along with us recommending who we'd like to use. We show them material pricing, and at the end of the project, we reconcile the bid numbers against the actual cost. We are more than happy to just make the profit and overhead that we bid the job with. But it is a two-way street in that we don't also lose, and the owners are kind of our owners. We ask them to kind of share responsibility for the budget as much as we do.
So. Do you do any work yourself? Like, do you do the woodwork or?
This weekend I.
Not you personally. I mean, your people.
Yeah, we do quite a bit. Bring on we have a job last week where my crew put in doors and casing. We love to do doors and windows because they, clients interact with them for a really long time after we're done, and we'd like to make sure they're done right,
So how do you charge for that? Do you build in a profit as if you were a separate sub and your supervision, or is it just one?
No, just one markup. There's one kind of overhead and profit fee that goes on all the costs on the job. So, yeah, it's not double. No double charging there.
Well, and I think, at least with my personal experience with your company, Vinny, and with you, is that you your project manager on our job was very creative and talented and on it, which yep. I think and really educated yep. about what we wanted and the processes that exist. And how much do you think your time is spent in that training piece? Because it's difficult to find somebody as detail-oriented and creative as you had with Woody on our job.
Yeah, I'd say it just kind of takes finding the right person. The right kind of personality is the first thing I'd say I look for. And then, depending on their background, we bring them into the company and I show them how I like to run business. And, it's kind of an ongoing training. We don't send them away for 2 months and it's kind of in the field training on the fly. But, Woody, he's been, his personality's fantastic. He gets along great with contractor clients. And I just kind of have been working with him on some of the intricacies of how I like to build things,
What's his real name?
Woodrow Thompson.
No, Woody it's a little joke here, in the construction business, his name is Woody.
Exactly why we hired him.
That was why he was hired. Look at that.
I know, it's amazing. You talk about having a passion for something. He had the passion when his parents named him.
Mm-hmm. So
his dad is a fantastic woodworker, too.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So now how do you manage to balance, running a business, actually working in construction, having a family, you have twins and, how do you manage to make it all work in Santa Barbara?
I don't know. It's touch and go.
You said before the break, during the break, that you do everything. Your wife doesn't help at all with the kids. So it must be really difficult for you.
Yeah, now you're getting in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. She's listening, Neil.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you just have to, like, put in a certain amount of hours at work, and then you go home and you, you know, put work away. I would say that's probably the thing that's helped me the most, is just making sure when I'm at the office, I'm engaged at the office. But when I'm home, I try to disconnect as much as I can, because construction can be a little all-consuming sometimes. So.
Oh, for sure. You know, given that you can be constantly figuring out, you know, you encounter a problem and you're constantly noodling on why and how to fix it and what creative methods you can use to get to the end result.
Yeah.
In Santa Barbara, what do you think is the hardest thing to overcome? When you think about our weather, you know, we don't get rain very often. And oftentimes when we do get rain, everybody realizes they have a leak or something's going on. Would you say water is the number one, public enemy number one to construction? Or what should people be, I guess, looking for in their contractor, and what qualities?
You know, I think we don't really have, the weather doesn't affect us too much. I think if you use, you know, Santa Barbara is a pretty easy place to build from that. We get kind of a long building season, pretty much year long. But I'd say the hardest thing to deal with probably around here is just the general labor shortages, and kind of, you know, the pool of workers. And, you know, it's a little tough to find people. There's more work than there are people to put work in place sometimes. So,
and I guess another challenge, maybe more so for the developers, is has been historically very difficult approval processes. And you're not going to answer that, obviously.
No. I've experienced and worked through the approval process myself. And you know, I would say I came out of that process feeling like as long as you know the rules and kind of work within the confines of the rules, you can make it through there. I feel like where people really kind of beat their head against the wall is when they try to buck the system and or don't understand what's driving the rules. So I don't know. I don't feel like the city, county are a huge hindrance to our ability to put work in place.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hello, Santa Barbara. Great news. You should see what just opened on State Street in the Granada Block. The Unity Gift Shop has new and very gently loved collectibles, fabulous clothing, jewelry, and treasures for all ages. And right next door in the gift shop annex, you will find fabulous furniture and even more clothing. Everything is priced way below retail. Your purchases will support one of the premier charities in town, helping thousands of less fortunate families, their children, and seniors. See you at 1209 State.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we have Vinny Arndt from Arndt Construction with us in studio. So, Vinny, how has the addition of 3D imaging and modeling and all that design, you know, really help your company in terms of building?
I was introduced to 3D modeling when I was working with Cottage Hospital on the big, their kind of big expansion project from 07 to 4 or to 12. And we used 3D modeling to figure out if everything fit without clashing, or kind of, you know, if the ductwork could avoid the wiring and the conduits and stuff. So that was my first introduction to it. But one thing I found when I started my business is that a lot of homeowners have a hard time visualizing what their architect has drawn. And they're not, you know, having kind of grown up almost looking at drawings, I can, you know, quickly look at them and see what in my mind what it's going to look like. But a lot of people don't do that all the time. So one thing we started to do back in 14 when I started the business was take the architect's drawings and import them into a 3D model, show the client first what the space would look like, you know, what the living room looks like, generally size. And then we found after that it was a great canvas to then start adding our finishes and show them what their finish selections were going to look like. Like, this is what your black windows are going to look like, or your walnut floor. Kind of color palette and just tones and stuff.
That must be extremely helpful because many people can't visualize it. Yeah. You know, that's why there's a whole profession of stagers and when they're selling homes, because it's hard to have that vision, if you will, of how the colors all work together.
Yeah, and then the next step is it really helps my guys in the field see what the end result is supposed to look like. So we actually, you know, we build the model, we import finishes into it, cabinets, light fixtures, and then we take pictures out of it and paste them on the walls and show the tradesmen what...
It's like a vision board.
Yeah, it is.
Pinterest board.
Yeah, it really helps them kind of understand, okay, well, you know, a TV is going to go here later, so I can't put this here, you know, and this wall gets stone cladding on it, so, you know, it needs to have the outlets, you know, stick out a little bit more than normal and certain things like that. So it's really helped us keep kind of build our projects and have it done one time without it going, oh man, that's not what we wanted. You know?
Or I think it also helps as the builders be able to have it be more usable. So the light switch is where the light switch should be, and everything's where it's supposed to be, or where it, you know, people would expect it to be, as opposed to having it be someplace else and everyone being confused.
Yeah, no, it's definitely helped us kind of allow the owner to okay things before we put it in place and have spent their money, which is the whole idea.
Right. You know? So now, through your history of being in construction, what projects are you most proud of?
Definitely proud of being involved in the Santa Barbara Cottage Hospital. They're, you know, I would say there's never going to be another opportunity for me to work on a job that size in my life.
And touch so many people's lives, really.
Yeah. And then, you know, on the kind of residential side, we've got to build some beautiful houses. I love stonework. It's always been a passion of mine. And, you know, I love driving by some of those houses and looking at the beautiful stonework and going, nice that we built that.
Well, thank you, Vinny. Thank you for being here. And thank you for listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you next week.
It's